Well, hello, good afternoon, Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph for another Thursday. My name is Scotty Hertz, broadcasting live from a super secret location within the city limits, but it's still a secret. It's a secret. Can't reveal our sources, whether open or closed. And yes, once again, thank you for joining us. And I am joined on the line, as becoming per normal, as usual, by Adam A. Donaldson, Chief Assignment Editor of Open Sources and Head of Guelph Politico. Adam, are you there?
Oh, I am here.
Oh, he's there. Right. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Good. So, how's things, as I always say, as if we, you know, we were catching up, like, long distance with Granny. How's things in your neck of the woods?
Things are good. Things are good.
Yeah.
I spent most of my day watching The Vampire Diaries on Prime because, you know what? I just want to deal with teen vampire drama right now.
Yeah, not bad. You know, things could be worse than watching teen vampire drama. That's for sure. Anyway, coming up on the show, we have a plethora of topics. We're going to talk about Joe Biden securing the nomination as the Democratic candidate for the President of the United States in the upcoming election. And COVID, once again, on everybody's minds. Is it still with us? Yes, it is. And we'll talk about how and when and why and what the heck is going on. We probably need like a whole nother hour to talk about that one. But first, off of the top, once again, I have this marked down in my notes as Black Lives Matter Week 2, but that's a bit vague. I wouldn't call it just that because there's far more going on than just something as I was going to say trite. That's just my own notes. But there's so much to cover. Now, I think we should probably start off from a local perspective, Adam, because I did. Mm-hmm. I saw you in the live feed. I watched most of what was going on in Guelph, and supposedly that is one of the largest marches that Guelph has seen. One person said probably since Victory in Europe Day, that many people in the downtown. You were right in the fray, right up front. Tell us a bit about what happened on Saturday in town. And what you saw?
Yeah, I was. They had a stage set up just to, like sort of in front of City Hall at where Cardin Street meets Wilson Street. And yeah, it was really positive. It was really affirmative. It was a great space for people of color in town. And you know, I think that's key. And something I tried to get at it, what I wrote for Guelph Today last week, is that, you know, a lot of times these spaces don't seem open to people of color. And that seems odd because it's a public space. But, you know, I've been to how many protests over the years? And
I second that. Yes.
You
very, both yeah, in and outside of the protest. Yeah, for sure.
You very rarely see people of color. You very True. Rarely see people of color delegating to council. And it's a fascinating and kind of disturbing question for me is, you know, why more people of color, BIPOC, which is a term I learned in the last week, Black Indigenous People of Color, you know, why there isn't more, you know, why people of color don't feel comfortable in our political atmospheres, especially. I mean, that has been slowly changing, but you go outside, like in quote unquote normal times, and you go to the mall, you go downtown, you know, we have an incredibly diverse community. But in our political enclave, in our political cliques, I'll use that term, it just seems like people of color give that kind of a wide berth, which is a shame. And that's why this felt very, very different, is because people of color were front and center. And like I said, it was, I mean, the issues are serious, but the message was positive. You know, technically, it was probably one of the most glitch-free protests I've ever been to.
Yes, it, you know, it seemed to be running very smoothly. From what I saw there, I was like, I was very impressed. There was no, and considering the period of time, it was assembled fairly quickly, wasn't it? Like it wasn't like lightning speed. This wasn't, you know, months in the making. It was like a week probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a week.
A week.
And yeah, and you know, the weather was nice. Everybody was wearing a mask, or at least, you know, I don't
vast majority, right? Is that?
I can't say for absolute if 100% of the people there were wearing a mask, but like so many people were wearing a mask, I definitely would have remembered someone not wearing a mask. It would have stuck out like a sore thumb. So you know, from that perspective, at least trying to do what we can to maintain public health, it was very successful as well. And yeah, it was a huge crowd. They marched the downtown was pretty much closed down for 2 hours because from people marching up and down and around. It was a sight to see for sure.
And of course, we saw marches not just in other parts of Canada, but worldwide. I was going to say the majority of them peaceful. Or again, we saw a lot of police action that not even calls into question, just sort of proves the point as to why the marching is going on. There's been, again, we could probably dedicate a whole hour to just the marches we've seen around the world. But one I specifically wanted to mention, let's start with Minneapolis, first of all, and the mayor of Minneapolis getting booed off of the scene saying, oh, no, we can't abolish the police. He gets booed out of the way. Meanwhile, I think it was later in the day, the council made a decision that, no, we're actually going to, like, defund the police and come up with different ways of policing our city. And at first, I honestly thought that was fake news. I saw that and I was like, there's no way. There's no way. The mayor's out and he got, you know, chased away. Not in a violent way. He just kind of walked. There's this long walking shot of him, like, walking away. And city council, and I guess when city council down there has a majority, the mayor can't really, there's no veto or anything. It's just that's what's going to happen. So they are seriously analyzing how they're going to come up with a different system. And I saw an article, I didn't read it yet, was sent to me that it's not without precedent in the U.S. The Camden, New Jersey supposedly defunded their police and came up with different means of policing and methods to take care of all of these issues. It's not just the issue of policing, but it's subdivided into many parts, and the part in particular that affects our recent incidents in Canada has been in terms of mental health and people in mental health crisis, and how do we handle that? Do you send armed people to deal with that? Again, right. We could probably spend another hour on that. This is just so vast, this topic. But I want to jump to, because it seems like on the hour, something is getting pulled down. Bristol. Bristol, UK.
Mm-hmm.
The man who ran the slave trade in the UK. He wasn't just, he was the mastermind of the slave trade, or one of them. He wasn't just a slave trader. Edward Colston's statue pulled down and rolled off the docks. It reminded me of it. The Boston Tea Party, because I wasn't there, but this seemed to be a pivotal moment. This made the press on the weekend, and all you see is this statue being was pulled down and then dragged and thrown into the water. It seems it's been rescued out of the water and they're going to put it in a museum, and the reactions related to that. And now there has been a mass outbreak of particularly in the US and Confederate statues just being pulled down left and right. The symbol, there was so much discussion about the symbols of slavery, of the Civil War in the U.S., and honoring people who were not very good people. And finally, they just said, okay, screw this. We're going to lop Christopher Columbus's head off. We're going to pull this down, all this stuff. Confederate flags banned from NASCAR, which seemed to go with the territory. I don't know what they're going to do with the Dukes of Hazzard. So the symbols, beyond the other issues, people have taken direct aim at the symbols that have been a holdover for many, many years and sore spots for lots of people. It's finally happening. It's just nope, no more.
And they're also looking at changing the names of a couple of the forts in the southern U.S. And, you know, it goes to show you how much we don't sort of pay attention to history that, you know, Fort Bragg, which I think – even if you don't know where Fort Bragg is, you've probably heard about it anecdotally in, you know, news stories about, you know, this, you know, division of troops out of Fort Bragg is being shipped, you know, here or there. It's named after a famous Confederate general. He was a Union general, but and then retired, and then he was called back to action when the Civil War started. But Braxton Bragg spent most of 1863 ceding Tennessee to the Union. And on his Wikipedia page, it says that you know, he was one of the reasons why the war was lost. And then the other one they're talking about is Fort Benning. And the original General Benning was another Confederate general, and he's described on his Wikipedia page as being, quote, bitterly opposed to abolition, unquote. So, you know, these are probably not the heroes you want to name army bases after.
No. Maybe you should just say they're named after Billy Bragg and Annette Benning or something, you know, just change it up that way, right? You wouldn't have to worry. I'm sure they probably wouldn't be too happy about that. But it's funny you say that about Bragg as a general, because Trump is obviously chimed in on this, and he said, well, you know, those bases have, quote, a history of winning. He went full Charlie Sheen on the hashtag winning there. They have a history. I don't know, I changed his name. And I heard a bit today. I'm not even sure what it was on. I was just passively listening to the radio, and I didn't know he had this sentimental attachment to Gone with the Wind. They've gotten rid of Gone with the Wind. And this was before that HBO pulled Gone with the Wind. I guess they're sort of retooling it to try and provide context to the film, although it's difficult. If I remember, and I have, and no doubt you've seen it. I saw it years ago. I know that Hattie is an Oscar winner for the Maid.
Yes.
I feel terrible. I can't remember. It's Hattie. There's no, like
I can't
a
remember her name either.
There's an end credits trivia right question. I want to say Hattie McDermott, but anyway, no matter. She was the first black person to win an Oscar, but also was segregated during the Oscar presentation and couldn't go to the party afterwards because racism. And that was in 1939. So there's way more of a backstory there than just the overt racism of the film.
Hattie McDaniel.
Hattie McDaniel.
Yeah, and I would point out too, Gone with the Wind, it's owned by Warner Brothers, which has actually done some stuff to sort of address things in their catalog. I have a Blu-ray copy of some Looney Tunes cartoons that has, you know, warnings in it about the depictions of certain characters and sort of the racialized origins of that.
Oh, so, is it the Censored 11?
I can't remember if those ones are on it, but I mean, just generally, like the thing, like the old Pepe Le Pew cartoon.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I guess the run of the mill ones, let alone the ones that had absolutely overt
right.
Racism in them, which they were still showing on TV when I was a kid all those years ago, because it was just sort of like, oh, well, you know, it's just a cartoon. And then when you hear about it, when you're older and you're like, oh man, yeah, that was really bad. And yet we were subjected to it without even... and Tom and Jerry was another one. But yeah, it's like we've dived deep into pop culture already, but it's interesting how, well, it all adds up to the symbolism and everything that's going on there, everything from statues to cartoons is like they're within a week, there's been this, analysis, back to politics, I guess the Democrats in the US, putting forward the Justice and Policing Act, and took some flack, a bit of, I was going to say black flack, but yeah, flack from the black community about wearing the kente scarves. I guess you saw the shot. Mm-hmm. There were the picture making the rounds was of them taking the knee for the 8.5 minutes, which would be difficult for most of us, let alone the 70 and 80 year old you know, representatives that were doing that. But they were wearing, the scarf they were wearing was familiar to me. And it turned out it was actually like a ceremonial cloth from Kenya, kente cloth. And some people in the black community were like, I don't know, you guys. Like, there was a hint of cultural appropriation to it. Supposedly somebody in the black caucus had handed this stuff out, but it was weird. It's like it's one of those things, well, they meant well, but you know, you take a step back. And it's one of those things too, the picture was making the rounds and it said, imagine this being presented last year with absolutely no explanation as to what's going on. Everybody's got a mask on, they're kneeling and they're all wearing African garb. It was really, well, we're going to look back on these times and go, wow, 2020, what the hell was that?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like obviously performative, but I think it's one of the difficulties of what's going on right now. People are anxious to do things, and performative things are simple to do. And I know, you know, JT here in Canada got a lot of flack for taking a knee and going to that one rally in Ottawa. But, you know, on the other hand, what would people think if he didn't go? And I would agree that also the time for performative things are over. But on the other hand, We do still live in a world where Donald Trump is planning on having his first rally in months on literally on Juneteenth, the celebration of the end of slavery in America.
That's Emancipation Day, right? Yeah.
Right. Juneteenth. And it's going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the site of one of the worst racial massacres in modern U.S. history, the so-called Black Wall Street riot. So that's what Donald Trump's doing this year. And so if it's between wearing an African scarf and bending a knee in sort of a performative act of, so-called alliance, or, you know, holding one of your usually racist rallies on Juneteenth at the site of one of the worst atrocities against the Black community in the U.S., you know, which one am I going to take?
Yeah,
I'm just speaking as a white person, of course.
That's not just a dog whistle. That's like a dog whistle the size of a foghorn, isn't it? That's like, yeah. That's your way of saying, I didn't know that actually, but that's to hear that. The Tulsa race riots in either 1921.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people killed and many, many more injured and yeah, Black Wall Street. That's right. Sorry. That's news to me. I guess that was just announced today, I suppose. So also today, or it was late yesterday, I guess, things happening quickly too in terms of the House Judiciary Committee. Was the Racial Profiling and Police Brutality House Judicial Committee already in progress, or is that something else that just happened just like that? Do you know? Because it seems I'm going to pronounce his name, Felonese Floyd, George Floyd's brother, testified,
mm-hmm.
and I've heard bits and pieces of it, but the comment that stood out for me was, he said, you know, what is a black man worth? Is a black man worth $20? And make sure that my brother didn't die in vain. So within the scope of George Floyd dying less than 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
we have this somebody, you know, his brother already testifying in Washington as to what, you know, what all has gone down, will go down, and should go down in the future. It's unbelievable. This is warp speed. Everything's happening at, right? It's just very, to me, it sounds very fast. Committees and things like that, when they form them in Canada, it takes a year. Then a report comes out. They're like, boom, no, we're going to do this right now. So.
Well, I think the speed is a reaction to the lag, right? You know, this is, you know, if George Floyd were the first black man to be brutalized by the police over, you know, being the alleged perpetrator of a petty crime, it would be one thing. But, you know, he's the umpteenth black man.
For
and,
sure.
You know, I guess the more you ignore this, and this is probably a lesson to all the kids out there, the more you ignore something, the more it comes back and bites you when it eventually does catch up with you. And to that point, there was a story in, I think it's in a publication out of Albany, New York. And of course, one of the things people remember last week is that man who was pushed down by the Buffalo police so hard that he cracked his head and he was bleeding on the sidewalk and everything. Apparently, there was an incident in 2006 where there was a police officer, and I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but his name is Gregory Kwiatkowski, who had a black suspect in a chokehold. And, you know, it was severe enough that one of his colleagues in the Buffalo police force, Carol Haynes, who was a black woman, told him to stop and then reported him. And then 2 years later, she was basically fired 1 year short of getting her pension. It was like she was at the 19-year mark. And of course, when you get to 20 years as police, you know, that's point of early retirement. You can retire and get access to your full pension. Mm-hmm. So that's 12 years ago, where, you know, of course we've heard the refrain through all of this. It's like, oh, there are good cops out there. There are good cops who will report it. And, you know, and the only reason these guys did in the case of George Floyd is because they were new on the job, blah, blah, blah. Here's a veteran cop, 19 years on the force, saw something wrong, said something, and was fired because of it.
And that was the way they shut things down in the past. And still do, I guess, to some degree, as to that all has to change. Will it change? We don't know, right? But I did see a couple of things today that there's some speculation that George Floyd and the cop in question, the, well, let's say alleged murderer, but we don't live in the state, so I can say whatever I want, knew each other somehow. Did you hear any of this today? That
it's not alleged. They did actually know each other. They both did security at a Minneapolis club. And apparently, you know, take all of this with a grain of salt because it comes from, you know, people who may be misremembering things because of the heightened emotion involved. But apparently there had always been some tension between the two of them. But yeah, they had been, their paths had crossed before at this club. I guess the officer in question was doing some moonlighting. George Floyd was working at the club too. And apparently George Floyd had issues with, I guess, the severity at which Officer Chauvin bounced at the club as he was enforcing the law while he was in uniform. So,
and all this will be a factor in the when it does go to court eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we are with how we are with legal things. We keep throwing in allegedly, but like I said, it's in America, so we can pretty much say what we want. It's not gonna...
Before we move on from Minneapolis, I just want
yep.
Because we were talking about the move there to defund or to disband the police, and I know there's been a lot of... I've seen it on social media. A lot of people are like, well, what does that mean exactly? And it's like, you can't get rid of the police, blah, 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 blah. We want to make decisions based on facts, of course. And the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, which is the paper there, reported that in 2019, only 56% of cases where someone was killed was solved by the Minneapolis PD, and only 22% of rapes were solved. Which means that 4 out of 5 rapes in Minneapolis go unsolved. And when you compare that to the FBI's national figures, the clearance rate for murders, which is solved, means that the murder was solved. So that's what the clearance rate is. But the national clearance rate is 61.6% for murders, and the national clearance rate for rape is 34.5%. That still sounds abysmal, but it's, you know, 10% higher than what's happening in Minneapolis. So even just by the basic standards of, you know, what you expect the police to do, which is to catch criminals, the Minneapolis PD is almost like, if we take 50% as the failure mark, you know, they're failing. They are failing just the basic tenets. And that's before you get into things like community policing and, you know, conduct on the job, all these, the 17 previous notches against Chauvin for his, you know, brutality, just the pure basic of, here's a crime, catch the criminal, the police aren't doing their job. So maybe it's right to look at the whole institution. And as the one counselor said, I lost his name, but he said, you can't, you know, paint over the rot. You have to sort of take the whole house down and rebuild the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the thought now, at least permeating in Minneapolis, and the thought of these counselors, this veto, Jeremiah Ellison is his name, that, you know, that have this veto proof majority. That's their thought, is that, you know, you can't just fix a few things and think that's the end of it, that sometimes you have to break something down and completely rebuild it in order to get the best results.
Yep. The, I guess the radical overhaul has been a long time coming, but it's coming like a steamroller now. And speaking of councils, turning to something a bit more local, maybe you heard, there's going to be a motion in Hamilton to the Hamilton Police Services Board. And initially I thought the motion was going to be, let's reduce things by 20%, but it's more, what would a 20% reduction in policing look like? So they're beginning to ask the hard question, saying, okay, if we reduce things by 20%, and in Hamilton, that's $34.3 million, what will happen? It was also mentioned that in Hamilton, they've tried to get body cameras onto the police there. It's been voted down 4 times. I wonder if it's fifth time lucky for that. I was surprised at how expensive body cameras are, from seeing a couple of things in terms of getting them on people. I, and, you know, I shouldn't really claim technical ignorance because I really don't know that much about body cameras, but wouldn't a GoPro do the same thing? Like, isn't there a way? A lot of the video that we see of police brutality and police being bad is just people using phones. It's like, couldn't they get some kind of off-the-shelf solution, or do police body cameras have to be some kind of special? A GoPro can survive, you know, some people climbing mountains and whatnot. Like, why can't they just stick them on the uniforms?
I'm not 100% sure about the technicals, but I was listening to a lawyer talk about body cameras, and it was in the context of the RCMP, and apparently there are a lot of sort of I guess technical loopholes. You know, not just in terms of the technology, but
like
terms
when
of
they magically turn off, right? Is that yeah?
Right.
That seems to be easy.
How much space you have on memory cards? Some of them don't have really great battery life as well, so you'd have to change batteries in the middle of a shift. And a lot of these things come with like internal batteries that you just have to plug in your USB. There's no real changing of the battery, so that might be a problem as well. You know, the battery runs out halfway through a shift. The other problem is how much storage capacity you have on your servers, because if you have even just 100 police officers on patrol in a day, taking 8 hours of video each, mm-hmm. You know, even if that's like 10 gigs per person, that's, oh God, math, like 10,000 gigs
terabytes
of video for one day from three shifts on one day. That is a heck of a lot of computer space you need to open up. And that gets nothing into the, you know, the legal aspects of how long do you store the mm-hmm. video and who gets access to the video and how is the video administered. And, you know, it's one of these things, the whole thing about body cameras, it's one of these things that's like sounds deceptively simple, but in terms of the actual execution, it's, you know, it's a bit harder than people might think.
And when asked, Prime Minister Trudeau did the bit of a dodge. He's like, well, we're kind of looking into it. He didn't say, yes, absolutely. It was more like, well, we're going to examine all the possibilities, blah, blah, blah. Well, but if they would stop beating on people and running them over with truck doors and things, you know, maybe they wouldn't need them.
Well, on the other hand, I did watch the presser today. I was kind of half watching it, and I noticed that there was a definite shift in the usual JT soft delivery of things. He was getting pissy about how the leadership in the RCMP are apparently not seeing systemic racism. So at least, you know, Justin Trudeau does acknowledge and see the systemic racism. Whether or not he's prepared to do something about it is another question. But hey, you know, the first step of solving any problem is recognizing there is one. So there's that.
For sure. And an ever-evolving story, which we will probably get to at a future date as well. But we'll have to leave that there for now. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. We're going to take a bit of a break, but we'll be back shortly. So stick around for part two. A little taste of some classic punk rock there. I think that was from 1984, a band called the Red Skins, a name you probably couldn't get away with these days. And that song was called Kick Over the Statues, very on point. And even though it's 35 plus years old, you know, they were on there. It was a prediction almost of what was going to happen. Anyway. Speaking of predicting what's going to happen, we probably can't predict what's going to happen now that Ontario is moving to stage two in the COVID reopening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Adam, you would think the way some people were behaving, a lot of people were behaving, that this whole COVID thing pandemic is just behind us. Have you noticed this at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of in the back of my head throughout all of this. You know, it's I think that there's obviously a lot of pent-up desire to get back out, and it feels like there's a rush to sort of get this done, that the worst is behind us, that maybe we can mitigate the risk. I don't know, maybe we can. And you know, the news out of I think it was a British study, and that's it's kind of been backed up by the WHO, that the World Health Organization,
not the band,
the 60s.
The WHO said great, yeah.
That would be interesting, though. But
you never know. You know,
wearing masks. If you wear a face mask, 50% of the time, or 50% of the population wear a mask. It reduces the R value, which is the spread of the disease from one person to the other, to less than one. So there's definite scientific evidence that shows that wearing a mask helps. And anecdotally, there was a case in Missouri of a hair salon that had reopened sometime mid last month. And
gave a bunch of people COVID, right? Is that, yeah?
Yeah, no. Actually, no.
The hairdressers
there had COVID, but because they wore masks and they did contact tracing of the 140 some odd people who were either staff members at the salon or were customers at the salon, they did that contact tracing and none of them got COVID. And it sounds like it was because of the two people with COVID were wearing masks the whole time, and they were, you know, observing that sort of the proper health and safety protocols that Missouri had laid out. So, I mean, when you hear stuff like that, I think it also gives a false sense of security as well. Having said that, I think my concern is that what we're heading for is kind of like a two-tier system where we have some parts of the economy open and other parts closed. Like the last bit is like office towers. Office towers are part of stage three. And of course, who works in office towers? Well, it's not, you know, the people making minimum wage, right?
No. And plus, you have to take the lift or the elevator, right? You have to, like, that'd be the number one, especially if you're way up high, right? Is no one, I mean, I've been, when I have to take elevators these days, staying away completely. So,
yeah,
managing to stay in good shape, but I don't know if I'd want to be climbing 40 flights if I worked somewhere in Toronto.
Right. It just feels like we're in the phase of this now where some people are going to be involved in this social experiment of, like, is it safe to reopen, and how much more risk are we going? And we're kind of seeing blowback about that in the United States, where they have, you know, over 20 states where cases are on the rise again, even in, you know, highly populated states like Texas and North Carolina. And, you know, they can't blame them on the protests, at least not yet, because these are cases that were coming in before the nationwide protests were starting. So,
yeah, and it was pretty heartening to see, going back to topic one there, how many people were wearing masks at the protest in Guelph. I was very impressed by that. Mm-hmm. Social distancing or physical distancing is virtually impossible in a situation like that. I'm sure people tried their best, but it's just not on. But what else seems to be going on too is a bit of conflict between the regions. The Golden Horseshoe isn't opening up right away. It's possibly that June 19th is what I heard, which is a week later than everybody else. And there's been some griping about that. There was the mayor of Haldimand, just inside the zone, getting a haircut to the chagrin of Doug Ford, who's like, oh, come on, guys, give me a break. I can't remember what he said exactly. So they're like, well, and there is also the possibility that people will come outside, within the Golden Horseshoe to regions such as Guelph. And we're right on the edge. Halton is right on the edge. And the mayor of Halton was on the news saying, this isn't fair, the usual. It's like, it's 1 week difference. And going back to masks, what's happening locally in town is, like, if you go to a business, you're to wear a mask, and if not, you're going to risk a fine. But then somehow, and maybe this has changed since I read it, masks not totally required on Guelph Transit yet. All the transit systems within the Golden Horseshoe and the TTC are saying wear a mask. So there's this contradiction, right? It's, to me, it should be all or nothing. It's like, just wear the damn mask if you're going to be out with other people, whether it's at the march or on the bus or whatever. But there's this. And then, of course, the other people's like, I'm not going to wear a mask. So it seems to be one of the proven things. I know it's like initially... Dr. Tam and others are saying, well, you know, if you follow the other regs of washing your hands, keeping distances, and all of those things, then a mask isn't required. And
well,
then
it's one of those things, right, a good idea. There wasn't enough masks for everyone.
Right.
So in lieu of being able to get a mask, the best thing to do is, like, wash your hands and stay home. And now that, you know, production is sort of caught up to meet, you know, the demand that's going to be there, it's kind of, they're kind of saying, okay, now, you know, wear a mask by all means, like the supply is there. And I think that's been a problem of communication, that, you know, when you kind of explain it that way, you're like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense.
I was given a K95 mask and I had to look it up because I'm used to N95 and I thought it was kind of like, you know, Bart gets Malk instead of milk. I'm like, what, a K95? Who? What is this? It seems okay, but, you know, it remains to be seen. I suppose it is a face covering. I don't know. It doesn't have any, I wouldn't put any medical merits on it, but there's a lot of talk that face coverings are also worth it, too, if you can keep your speaking mostly to yourself or whatever the heck that you may have and can contain that, then it's to the benefit of everybody.
Right, and I think confusion, as you were saying, that, you know, the mixed messages, it's, you know, here, like Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, all commercial businesses, you have to wear a mask. But, you know, the other 75, I think, public health authorities, it's not there. TTC announced today, you have to wear a mask on TTC. Well, here in Guelph Transit, it's like, quote, like strongly recommended. It would certainly be helpful if we could get everyone on the same page. I'm not sure how practical that would be, but, you know, it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense if you are someone who has to go into Toronto and you have to wear your mask on the TTC, and then you get back to Guelph and
you just rip it off and throw it in the garbage. Huh? just wear the damn mask.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I'm hoping to see lots of masks out there. I heard the best quote I heard all week, I think, regarding COVID and the pandemic in general was I can't remember the doctor's name. I think he specializes in seniors. He said the pandemic is only over for the people who don't survive it. And that sounds, that's pretty bleak. But in one sentence there, it kind of sums up what is actually happening. It's not over. There's, you know, restrictions are... I think people just hear restrictions are being lifted. They're like, oh, great, let's have a party. The boys on the corner of my street were playing beer pong. Like, that's your way of saying an F you to absolutely everything, right? And it doesn't... They're definitely not related. And I don't want to sound like a rat, but I'm just giving you a local example of people near my home, and no one knows where I live. You do. no one out there knows where I live. This one example in one neighborhood of people being morons. So the more somebody needs to do the moron formula in terms of, okay, if there's this many people flaunting the rules, then how many cases are we going to get? You know, no one will be laughing when they're intubated, right? So I think a lot of people are underestimating the seriousness of this. I'd heard that in Hamilton, the cases on the rise are among young people. It's something like close to 50%, low 40s of cases is young people in Hamilton are getting COVID. So if they're getting it, it is being spread in the community.
Well, this is the weird part of COVID, right? Most of the fatalities are with people older than 65. But most of the carriers, and unfortunately I don't have that number in front of me, but most of the carriers in terms of like people who have had COVID and survived are in that like 18 to 45 bracket.
Right.
So while, you know, young people are definitely carriers, it's, you know, it's worth keeping in mind that, yeah, you will survive it. It's the older people in your life who will suffer.
And there are a lot of young people that maybe don't know that they have underlying health conditions or other things going on, or maybe nothing going on, and they're being seriously, seriously affected. So you can't underestimate the seriousness of this. And unfortunately, and I'm not just blaming young people because there are lots of people making doofus moves out there in terms of this. It's not over. It's, you know, restrictions are being lifted and they're trying to open things up again to prevent, I don't know, the entire collapse of society. No, society will not collapse. It's, early on in this, it was like, oh, things are going to be so different. It's like, I don't know. I don't know if things are going to be that different. I think the main thing that's going to be different is that a lot of things will be gone. Like the restaurant that you used to go to, like, just will not be there, or the businesses you used to frequent may not be there. So that's that remains to be seen. That's not all going to be solved within a week or two.
Well, this is true, and if anyone needs a reminder that anyone can get this, keep in mind that the Premier of Ontario and the Minister of Health both had to be tested. They were pulled from the press conference yesterday so they could both be tested for COVID-19 because the Minister of Education met somebody who had COVID-19. So, I mean, that's like 6 degrees of separation stuff. Yeah. But
if the minister had met this person and had been keeping the distances and washing the hands and wearing the masks, it might not be a problem. So I think there is more to that story. Maybe it's like Doug Ford's Mother's Day party or something where the regs got a little bit bent. And I do believe that people are bending the regs, but it's one thing when if you're in isolation and the other people in isolation. I think we will probably see the expansion of the bubbles, as they're calling it, where if you know, the people within your family, maybe your parents or in-laws are somewhere else and they're isolating and you are as well. Not keeping in mind that you probably have to stop to go to the bathroom, among other things. Like, there's lots of factors, but I believe we're going to see the expansion of the bubbles, let's call them, before long. So that's just a prediction, but we'll see. I don't know about the Golden Horseshoe, but Guelph, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we leave that there? I guess we'll leave that there, yeah, because we're at that point. But of course, there'll be more on COVID and pandemics and probably for the shows the rest of time until there's a vaccine. Turning back to the U.S. once again, Joe Biden. In the sea of everything that's going on, we get word that Joe Biden, 77-year-old Joseph Robinette Biden, opportunity knocks, young man. He won, what was it, Guam? Does Guam put him over the top? He won Guam on Saturday. So that's pretty much zipped it up for Joe Biden as the nominee. Now and I'm sure you heard of some of this back and forth, but the latest, or there has been a series of polls out that has Joe Biden ahead of Donald Trump, and Donald Trump absolutely lost it at a CNN poll, a poll that CNN presented that wasn't even CNN's. It was somebody else's. They just presented it. Mm-hmm. And, they were hit with some legal action from the White House, and CNN said it's the first time in 40 years that even the threat of legal action because somebody didn't like a poll had happened. And it seems there was a half dozen polls came out, everything from Fox, which is a favorite of the president, to others. They all had Biden ahead. They all have Biden ahead, and Trump doesn't like this, so he's going to sue. So this could be one of the most, if not the most interesting presidential campaigns we've seen in our lives, probably since 2016. It hasn't even really started yet, but it has started with Trump going to Tulsa and with Joe Biden, who doesn't seem to be afraid of a mask. Here's the difference. Trump, no mask. Biden wears a mask. So there you go. Make your decisions on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Our one American listener can take my advice on the USA.
Right. And then, you know, Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, posted a picture of him meeting the Trump-Pence 2020 campaign team. No one was wearing a mask. And then that picture and that post was deleted. So, you know, even when they do something wrong, I mean, a lot of has been said about this administration sort of not caring when they do stuff wrong. You know, there are apparently some limits, and somebody had a change of heart at some point about, you know, maybe the image of the Vice President of the United States meeting with 100-some-odd people, no one wearing masks in close quarters, that was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, but it's like the Brazil model, right? Just don't wear masks and pretend it doesn't exist and change your statistics so you can't see what's going on. But they're not quite there. They seem to accept that COVID is there, but definitely not a good image.
But yeah, the polls are interesting. I think there was like 15 different polls that showed Biden in the lead to some degree. That one poll you mentioned from SSRS, showed a 14-point lead, so it's like 55-41. That's a national poll, and of course, it doesn't. You know, the national poll is sort of inconsequential because it's the it's individual states you have to win, and it, you know, but it, I mean, Trump sort of lives and dies by the polls, so that obviously would make him sweat. And of course, you know, he has anything for a buck lawyers on staff who will send a cease and desist letter to a news organization.
To, just, to them, I can just see the late night commercial. Did you get a poll you didn't like? Well, call me and I'll fix that for you. That's the impression I get that who, that's who he is going to get to fight this. I don't know. Or Rudy Giuliani.
Somebody, but, you know, to send a, like, you have to retract this poll.
Call now.
Yeah. And and apologize for it. And it's like, well, no, we're not going to do that, which was more or less the CNN statement in short form. I think the most terrifying thing, and I'm not sure if Donald Trump maybe appreciates the nuance of this, but I mean, I do. So is Gallup said that he is at 39% approval rating, which is, you know, first of all, probably the lowest he's ever been. But at the same time, this is within the same area that Jimmy Carter had approval rating at this point in 1980 and George H.W. Bush had at this point in 1992. And the reason why I mentioned those two is because those they were one-term presidents.
Those were clobberings, at least Carter was for sure.
Carter was, definitely, yeah.
So I guess one of the key differences with Biden as well, and it kind of goes back to topic one, is that he actually spoke remotely, though, at George Floyd's funeral. I thought that was fairly significant that he was given that space considering that he is not the president. Now, obviously, if it was President Obama who has also chimed in on the situation in the U.S. as well, you know, that it would have been a very different scene. So I thought that was, it was like, well, it's Joe Biden. It's not Trump because it's Trump is incapable of addressing the BIPOC community in any meaningful way. So, and sort of echoing that as well, there's obviously a lot of speculation as to who his running mate will be. And everything that I've seen seems to be leaning towards a woman likely and somebody from the BIPOC community. Some of the names bandied around, Senator Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams. She was the, what, she can't, Georgia? She ran as governor of Georgia as a Democrat.
Yeah.
And former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, who was very deep in the Obama administration. So those are some of the names getting thrown out there. I don't know if that's just pure speculation, but I believe there is something to that. Not just the fact that it's probably going to be a black person of color, but if also the fact that it's a woman will be massively significant. What have you heard?
Well,
same thing, probably, right?
Since my ears to the ground, if I were to put money on it, I would say it's, you know, Stacey Abrams. I think she's a total package because she is a woman. She's a person of color. She's also very bright.
She is
a great speaker. I mean, she almost won. She would probably be the governor of Georgia right now if it weren't for the fact that the guy who won that election was also the guy running it. You know, it was that close, and she didn't concede. And, you know, and it amongst all this, one of the interesting election stories was in Georgia this week. Where they were voting in the primary there, and this involves Stacey Abrams too, because I heard Stacey Abrams tell this story about how she applied to get an absentee ballot, as is allowed in many places in the United States. She was sent an absentee ballot, she filled it out, and she went to put it in the envelope the that has complete postage on it and the address that you send it back. It's all made out for you. She went to put the ballot in the envelope. And the envelope to return the ballot was sealed shut. So you can't open it and then reseal it with tape because that's a kind of they take that as a sign of mail tampering. So she had to go and stand in line at a polling place like everyone else, even though she took the time, effort, and energy to go and get a ballot. And then I read an article today that the mayor of Atlanta didn't receive her absentee ballot. Meanwhile, you have these very long lineups at the polling places. You have apparently the Georgia Secretary of State, who runs the elections, ordering millions of dollars in new equipment that apparently nobody was trained on. And, you know, as we kind of look at Joe Biden's poll numbers and we kind of get excited about maybe being at the end of the Trump era, it's not a certainty, not because Donald Trump's going to trip over his own shoes, but because the systemic issues in the U.S. election system, where states that will make the difference, like Georgia, have utterly hopeless voter suppression efforts, both systemically and both in terms of, you know, how they're run. They're purging people from the polls, but also making people wait in line for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours in some places. And yeah, people were organizing themselves. There's like video of people organizing themselves to, you know, to call into the Secretary of State's office to get polling times advanced so that everyone can get into a vote. It's just insane. This is where the election will be won or lost is issues like what happened in Georgia on Tuesday.
Yeah, because it puts us into, not us, puts them into dangling Chad territory, right? Where it's like, oh, you know, there's a bit of a problem. So, you know, is Trump totally wrong? He says somebody votes by mail is complaining about mail-in ballots is typical Trump, I suppose. But when things like that, like was the faulty gum on the envelope or something, you have to wonder. But if it's happening with the higher ups, obviously it's happening to anybody else who's trying to get in on the voting game as well, right? So it's things that they need to sort out. But that's the problem with is no, like, that's, I think that's one of the key differences with us is we have a fairly standardized system up here, right? Whereas it's just so piecemeal down in the U.S. that it's boggles the mind. But that's freedom, baby, right? That's freedom.
Well, that's why I mentioned Stacey Abrams specifically, because why would you interfere with her voting? Because she's actually running an organization that is trying to combat voter suppression in the United States. That was something she took up starting last year. So, you know, by all means, send the person fighting voter suppression with a loud national platform evidence that you're support, like that you're trying to suppress the vote. Whether it's ignorance or whether it's on purpose, it doesn't matter. You know, by all means, give Stacey Abrams more of a platform to talk about how you're, you know, suppressing the vote of especially black people, because it is typically areas with large minority populations that are being affected.
Yeah, and I thought significantly the first person out of the gate to endorse Biden was Colin Powell. Mm-hmm. Who is a Republican. So that's saying something. He said he backs Biden because Donald Trump insults everyone and is a liar. So it's very plain speaking there from Colin Powell, and I don't think he's alone in that. But the fact that he's a Republican and also a person of color is very interesting, like right out of the gate. So few more months of this, and we will obviously be coming back to this on and off, but mostly on, I think, over the next few weeks, whether it's from the bunker or remotely, or perhaps even from the station if we're in phase whatever of the regs being changed. Anyway, thanks so much, Adam, once again. And thanks everyone joining us here on Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM. We are heard every Thursday, rain or shine, from 5 to 6 p.m. at this station. Adam, can you tell our fine listeners where they can find out more about you and Guelph Politico and what you do?
Okay. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can find Guelph Politico at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I am Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook, and you can listen to me here every Thursday from 5 to 6. That's all else I'm going to say. Stay tuned for an episode of Keep Your Meters, which is one of the I was going to say lockdown, shutdown shows that have been broadcast on CFRU. And I take it sounds good to me, some preemptive, but stay tuned for that because it is an absolutely fantastic show, lockdown programming. And yeah, take care, and we will see you next week.